Good morning. Today is Friday, June the 22nd. I don't know if it's the first full day of summer, but...
I think so. I think
that's what it was. Yesterday, dusk, I think, was the last time of the year. I think today's the first full day
of summer, yeah.
Which, you know, if I was one focusing on the negative... Oh, well, now we're starting to lose sunlight.
Yeah, the days start getting shorter as of today.
But I don't do that one, so.
Nah.
Joining us this morning is the Executive Director of REDIC, Mr. Foster. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Natalie attired.
I'm wearing a coat. Yeah. I'm not particularly. I'm wearing a windbreaker.
That implies clear skies. I like your
attitude. There you go.
Yeah, let's see. Today's Why Do We Say It? Let's see how... Well, healed Mr. Foster is.
He's a heel, that's right.
Our
sure.
phrase is Achilles heel. You probably have a shot at this one.
Okay.
Why do we use the phrase Achilles heel to refer to a man's vulnerable spot?
Well, it's Achilles who was they cut him a tendon and he was unable to run as a result. It's the story of Achilles. It's a Greek story.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, now you're starting to fill in the stuff
that
counts.
Exactly.
Because Achilles' vulnerable spot was his heel, according to Greek mythology. Thetis, the mother of Achilles, dipped him in the river Styx in an attempt to render him invulnerable.
Mm.
Unfortunately, she held him by his heel to do so.
Yeah, there you go.
And thus, his heel became his one vulnerable spot. Achilles died of a wound received from an arrow shot into the heel.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
All right.
And now we have the Achilles tendon, which is that tendon that holds your foot.
Yeah, from flopping.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, I did notice last night that you did not get drafted yet again this year by the NBA. So condolences to the Fosters.
Yeah. I haven't gotten People Magazine's Sexiest Man of the Year yet either. So.
You know, that one wasn't even on my radar.
Yeah, no.
No one's actually.
Yeah. No one's actually.
So other than that, what does June mean for you?
June. Well, it's the end of our fiscal year, so that's exciting.
How does it look?
For REDIC is doing great, actually, and we had a good year lending. We had a good year income wise. You know, a lot of people don't know that we are a very small, but public agency, but we only really fund ourselves through our loan program. In other words, we have a corpus, a capital that we lend out, and
you mean a pool of money,
right? Basically, sorry, Liz.
Remember who you're talking to here, buddy.
A big pot of money.
Thank you.
And we lend that out, and then we live off the interest and fees on that, and that funds all of our operations. And so, I always say we're the only government entity that doesn't get any direct subsidy in terms of profit every year. And so it looks like we're going to be on track to return another, I don't know, $150,000-$160,000 into our loan fund in net profit, if you want to call it that.
So it kind of start, it's
it grows
seed money for
the
next cycle. Yeah.
And our goal is, you know, loan funds like these can only really be effective if they grow over time. And so that's always been our goal, is to return cash to the pot, if you want to think of it that way, and then we use those that revenue to fund a lot of other projects, you know, that we do, including, you know, sponsorships. We pay for our time, obviously, and all that, and the Fly Humboldt stuff. So for us financially, it was a good year, and we're looking forward to another one starting next year. So June
is it replicatable next year?
Or absolutely.
Circumstances changed.
No, we actually have been doing that same thing for years. and because we wouldn't exist if we didn't. You know, the organization has to turn a net profit every year to grow, and we can't survive without growth. And so, when 20 years ago, 1999, we had about $1.2 million out in loans. And now we have close to $8.5 million out in loans. And we're a tiny agency. We're 3.5 people. So, you know, we try to keep it fairly, you could tell by my garage sale furniture in the office.
Streamlined.
Very cheap. Yes, yeah. Exactly. you know, the staff all gets pens for Christmas, you know. And they have to make them last a year.
So they're not particularly busy then, huh?
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. We all share that one computer.
Yeah,
that
that's right.
TRS-80 we have out front.
Yeah, the Tandy. you mentioned Fly Humboldt.
Yeah.
Is that going to be what you remember 17-18 for?
You know, that was certainly a big accomplishment. And it's something we've been working on for years. you know, the last big presentation I made to the airline was in October of 17. And then they called us in December and said they wanted to start LAX. That flight has been very successful. We're already seeing sold out flights going south. And so that was a big deal. And it really sort of, if you want to call it, bent the curve a little, where we're starting to see more capacity. We're getting some attention both here and out of the area for that. And
because it's full or because you got it?
Both. I mean, when in the airline industry, again, which is relatively small, when someone gets new service, I don't care if it's a big airport or a small airport, it's, you know,
everybody knows.
Everybody knows, yeah, right. Yeah. And it, what's interesting about that is, of course, is the competitors will look and go, huh, what does this other airline know that we don't?
So it's like the first fast food or big box guy comes into a town, exactly. And everybody else goes, all right, what'd we miss?
Exactly. Yeah. And for a small airport like us, it's a particularly big deal because, I was in Cleveland in June at the Small Airports Council meeting, and a lot of small airports are just barely hanging on or still losing service across the country. And so for us to be able to maintain what we have, and people are always impressed. They go, well, what kind of planes are they flying? And I said, well, the Embraer E-175. And wow, how did you get that to fly here? And then when we added LAX, that really caught a lot of people's attention. And as I said, there were a lot of other airports who are struggling to keep anything or might have turboprop 9-seat service, that kind of thing. So yeah, that was a big one for us this year.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, the fact that the airline United is full to this LAX direct flight.
Yeah.
One of the things that I had feedback about was, well, these aren't that cheap. Okay. But, I mean, convenience versus, got resource, right? Whether it's time or dad just got back from the East Coast. Going out, he got jacked up for 2 hours because it was a little too windy in San Francisco. Shut down one of them, and now the ripple.
Yep.
So I think the convenience has a couple of different levels of definition. Are people willing to pay for, obviously, they're willing to pay for that.
Right. So when they first loaded fares, we were seeing about $400 round trip to to L.A. And then, you obviously will pay a little bit more if you're connecting through there. And then right around the time that the service launched, which is June 7th, we saw fares go down quite a bit. So they're running promotional fares right now.
Any idea where it's going to settle?
That's a great question. And I was actually having the conversation last night with somebody, and they go, you need to tell them to sell cheaper. And this is a local retailer.
Comes Greg up to a mount. Right. United saying, exactly. You need to.
And I said, let's say retailer, you're selling 90% to 100% of your inventory at price X. Would you arbitrarily drop the price? And he says, no. And I said, neither will the airlines. And so that's our dilemma here. I mean, there's a myth out there. No one ever flies here because it's too expensive. And it reminds me of Yogi Berra. No one ever goes there because it's always too crowded. And in fact, the pricing is higher, yet people are flying. We're seeing, load factors, which is the percentage of seats filled by paying passengers, pretty high consistently throughout the year. So it's a hard argument then to say to them, oh, well, you need to drop your prices. And they go, well, why? You're paying for them.
Right. Yeah, it's probably more of a supply-demand issue.
Exactly.
If there were three more flights coming in.
Exactly.
Or two other carriers. Yeah, okay, that changes the dynamics.
So, you know, for my 10-second commercial, they are doing great promotional fares right now. And so I'm telling people, book now if you can, book now if you can.
That's because, one 10-second commercial.
Right, there you go. So how do you deal with that, though? And this is part of what we deal with and we continue to do is that when you have competition in the market, then the pricing, then you get some price competition. And so that's why... you know, in our efforts to go out and meet with airlines, we never just meet with one, and we meet with two or three.
Yeah,
and
what's the phrase, cast a wide net?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And we make, you know, basically market-based pitches to them that show market data that shows, you know, why we think they'll make money in our market, even if there is more than one airline. And so we continue to do that, and that would be then you'd have, you know, another destination, but B, another carrier, which would have some price competition. And that's, I think that's important. And it's not like, well, that's a secret that we do that. Every airline knows that we're all out recruiting other airlines.
Sure, because you always want to have a plan B.
Exactly,
in case.
Exactly.
I would suspect that a lot of the challenge or the frustration is from folks who see in other airports families flying.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of families flying here because of the price. It's easier to drive somewhere. Okay, fine. Seeing others either wanting to emulate or you want to take your three kids so it's five and five times whatever the fee is a little bit more out of here than it is at other places.
Right.
They're probably just looking at that missing segment, and maybe it's always going to be drivers.
Right. Right. And,
or you drive to Santa Rosa, or you drive over to Medford or Reading, and that's where you jump off.
Right.
Okay, and that's just part of being where we are then.
Well, and I absolutely agree. And that's so true among, you know, a lot of things. You know, I can't find a job in this industry. It's like, well, you know, we're not going to have every kind of job here, right? We are a small community. I mean, we're 150,000 people. You know, I went to a concert in New Orleans that had more people, right? So, you know, we're never going to have all of the opportunities that you'll find in larger urban areas. So, say for example, Santa Rosa, and I'm friends with the airport manager there, and he's really kicking butt, although his terminal is terrible, and he knows that he's got to get a new terminal built.
But they're throwing new money at that,
trying to.
I mean, yeah, you can just sense that there's a vibrancy.
Right, but he's pulling out of a market area that's 10 times as big as ours, really. You know,
sure.
He's from Marin, basically, over to the Napa and everything else. And so that affords more opportunity. And he knows it.
Well, and their income strata is a little bit different.
Well, exactly.
Also, so you got a couple positives.
That Bay Area influence is great.
Oh, yeah.
But I always say, you know, people say, you know, jobs, well, I can't find a specific kind of job here. I said, well, move to San Francisco and be a logger. You know, it's not going to work. You know, I mean, you have more opportunities in San Francisco, obviously. It's a big city. Nevertheless, you know, not all communities can be everything to everybody. And so, so that's true in the airline industry.
So what does, and I don't know how we would describe ourselves, but let's say geographically separated rather than isolated.
Yeah.
Rural-based
economy,
stagnant economy. What is the best case scenario look like? Do we have a second carrier? Do we have a little from him and a little bit from them, and then United being the constant?
I think, you know, our best is a second carrier, and that's what we used to have three. And unfortunately, we had three right before the recession hit. But all three were actually doing pretty well in terms of volume.
So and it's out there.
It's out there. Oh, yeah. We've only captured about half of the traffic that we used to have.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster. Talk Shop presented by Mr. Foster at Redeck, American Ag Credit, CDH Painting, and
Lolita Cheese.
I'll do my live pop for the Gourmet Club after.
There you go. Sounds good.
At the end of the next break, yeah. Greg, when you think about airlines, you certainly have been up to your eyeballs on this one.
Yeah.
On a couple different levels.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Redeck, though, isn't just a pro-airline hustle entity.
No.
How do you determine, you said 3.5 staff,
mm-hmm.
where to put your time resource? Yeah, because there's meetings and all this other stuff sucked into also. But how do you determine this is something we want
to work on?
Yeah, we're going to do a push in this area. Sure. And do this next one later on.
Right. So specifically with the airlines, it started years ago. And it kind of just backed into it when I was asked to help with a project that the county airport manager at the time, Teresa Askew, was working on with Reading to start a new LAX service. And
That was a three-way, the triangle thing?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so that was in 2003. So, you know, it's been 15 years since we started doing this. But taking a step back, it does fit into a broader piece, which is we know that business, regardless of what kind of business it is, really is relying upon transportation.
Sure, you got to have the infrastructure.
And it's roads, it's you know, everything, right? It's also broadband, right? You know, when you're shipping a product that is digitally based, you need broadband. And so part of it is like, you know, what was one piece of transportation or two pieces in Redeck's case that there wasn't really an entity regionally that was really focused on? And for us, that was broadband and air service. And so it became, you know, something we kind of stumbled into, this is where we can play a role and really affect something that helps with the region. And so, you know, we did a lot of air service and continue to do a lot of air service work. We really worked hard and helped champion the first and the second fiber optic lines.
So kind of fill in the gap.
Right. Well, that's, you know, we don't need to do something that somebody else is already doing.
Now, how does that differentiate, or how do you guys differentiate, rather, that from seeing an opportunity that isn't being done?
Right. So, and that's, I think, the essence of a business and economic development, right? Is you see an opportunity there and you jump into it. And we look at, you know, if there's something coming along that we see as an opportunity, we are either going to try to jump into it or we're going to pull the team together of partners and say, hey, this is something we're looking at. So, you know, my board is its elected officials. You know, we did a year and a half ago kind of what are some of the big priorities that we wanted to look at countywide. And one of the things that really came up was housing, in fact. And related to really the inability of companies to grow here or get employees because of a lack of housing inventory. And so we are going to be sponsoring a roundtable, kind of a summit on that in September. But we're also working with the city of Eureka and others to try to look at what tools are out there to actually help increase the inventory. So that
Eureka-centric or county-wide, but it's just kind of first step with Eureka.
Well, Eureka's doing a lot right now, and we've gotten involved. They're actually working on a kind of a neat project for the fall with the city of Arcata and the county of Humboldt and others to really look at accessory dwelling units and how those can be built. And,
does that mean
mother-in-law units?
Thank you very much. Yes, yeah. Outhouse
right.
concept.
Well, and they're doing a lot of zoning changes for, you know, you can do more densification, you know, more lot splits, that kind of thing. And so
does that whole push replace, well, you remember, you were around, the artist live workspace that was the big push in Old Town to have the second floor.
I don't think it replaces it. I think
that really didn't get too much traction, did it?
It did. Well, no, there's still a fair amount down there. Yeah, I mean, if you look at,
but there's a lot of empties also.
Well, there is, but part of that I think is quite honestly that not a lack of demand. It's a lack of the business owners really and the property owners really taking advantage of the opportunity. But there was also policy and regulation issues that weren't dealt with. So, you know, if you look at what the city in Eureka is doing now, it's updating its zoning code because what we were saying we wanted was basically prevented by the text of our own code. And so
the parking.
Yeah. Well, stuff. Parking and, you know, setbacks and, you know, all sorts of things. And so, you know, it's a whole gamut of rules and regulations that were in the way that even though we've said this is what we want, we couldn't do it by our own rules. And so
there's a recognition of that now.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, way overdue. I mean, that zoning code was basically put in place when I was 1 year old, and I'm not a young man.
Okay, we're going to stay away from the whole age thing, because I think I can be trumped at any time
There you go.
KINS News and Information Times, 841.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning. KINS News and Information Times, 8:45. We're back to Talk Shop with Greg Foster, but before we do, a little comment about the Gourmet Dining Club. Greg, you grew up in the Benbow area, right?
Absolutely. Well, Miranda, yeah.
Yeah.
So Benbow was the place to go.
So you've seen the change in the restaurants since the Porters have taken over.
Oh, yeah,
and they've done
it's
the
a
investment
gorgeous
recently.
Spot. Gorgeous
that's,
spot.
That's one of, unabashed plug now.
Perfect.
That's one of the opportunities you have with the Gourmet Dining Club.
Oh, wow.
It's a two-for-one. You buy the ticket booklet for $69.95. I can't say $70. I've been told not to say $70. So a little bit less than that. And you get two-for-one, and you get 12 different restaurants throughout the year. Now, granted, we're down to, you know, last week here in June, so
right.
let's say 11. But Benbow is one of those.
Oh, man.
You know, you just have the opportunity to go down there and I don't know. It's not that far away, which is really intriguing.
It's really not.
John Sapper was in earlier in the week, and we were talking. He said, yeah, you know, from Fortuna, it's only, everything's centric to Eureka, because that's
right.
Where I am, by
exactly.
golly. You know, it really is just kind of a hop and a skip for some of the folks, and to be able to save half on one of the meals at Benbow, it's going to save you pretty much the entire booklet.
Well, that's a beautiful location. And, I mean, you go to the city, you're going to wait an hour or more for a top flight place that's doesn't even touch this place.
Stand in line.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is it's gorgeous.
And parking
there.
Is free.
Well, and you're. I mean, look at the location. It's beautiful, and the facility is gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. It's with some of the last year with Mom dying and stuff. One of the cool things was we went there for Father's Day with Dad.
And it was nice.
On the patio, June.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it couldn't have been any
it.
Better.
It was just, can't beat it.
You know, neat memories.
Yeah, now I might take the afternoon off.
Okay, well, you do that. What we're trying to do is get folks to be able to take advantage of this.
Oh, okay,
also.
There you go. Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
I'll buy one of those. Then
yeah,
I'll
so you either go to the website at KWSW980.
There you go.
Or give Jody a call in the office. She's there now.
Oh, okay.
We've been here for like a little bit of time. So
excellent.
Anyway, that's Gourmet Dining Club. Check it out. It's
great deal.
Good stuff. And a lot of new places that maybe you haven't gone to in a long time. So, Greg, when you're looking at the housing and you're looking at some of the challenges that are in the area,
mm-hmm.
in the past, you know, we're dealing with people showing up for work on time and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's the same old, same old.
Right.
I would suggest that before the housing, it's the drug culture and things associated to that. Why would somebody for the hospital want to come here if that's what their first impression is coming into the town where the hospital is?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, or they walk the parking lot and they see three people cruising it or wandering through.
I absolutely agree.
So how do you balance that? How do you prioritize housing versus the other. One's a quicker fix,
right?
Which is weird to think that housing is a quicker fix,
exactly.
But it certainly is versus some of the other challenges that we have culturally in the area.
Right, and I think that you know, I don't have the answer for the drug issue, except to say that I know it's there, and it used to be that we had, you know, a lot of quantity of labor force here, right? You had a lot of folks. And if you look at the most recent labor force statistics and the unemployment rate, we're dealing with a real problem with quantity. And so we need to start addressing, and I do agree, it's got to be comprehensive. How do we get people here who can work and who are willing to work?
Now, the marketplace may be taking care of it, because I've heard that the Trimigrant wave hasn't hit.
Right.
To the same extent. So it might be something that's starting to
take
care of
itself,
but the residual of it is still.
Right. But right now, if what kind of impression do we give if someone's coming into town who's interested in moving here? And it depends on where you are. I've had people come into town and say, these are absolutely gorgeous, right? Because a lot of the issues we are facing around that are not unique. There's community. When I go
not
to the
unique,
rural,
but still present.
But still present. Now, it's not enough to say, well, everybody else has it, so we don't. You know, that's not good.
You're burying your head in the sand, isn't it?
We want to be better than everybody else. You know,
right.
we're small town, but we're not small time. And so, you know, it's a comprehensive approach. I think we need to deal with housing inventory. We need to deal with the quantity of our labor force, which means getting people here who can work and who are willing to work, and then the quality, which is dealing with, you know, training and those sort of issues, but also dealing with some of the very basic soft skill stuff, like show up every day, you know, personal hygiene, keeping yourself
the truly basic,
alcohol-free. Yeah, exactly.
We had an experience in Ukiah. It was really disturbing. I mean, it was cool that they were working, but customer service?
Right.
I'm not sure that they could spell it, let alone say it or embrace it. It was really almost disturbing. I mean, it's been now a number of weeks. I mean, not even a thank you, which, you know, is still underwhelming.
Right.
Not
right.
even that. Just kind of a look.
Yeah. And that's, a lack of training. And I think that people are really trying hard to find anybody to fill the position.
Yeah. Well, it'll make for an interesting show next month.
There you go.
See everybody tomorrow.